Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I'm Cooper, and with me I have...
Hi, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
And tonight we're talking about Season 3, Episode 7, Digestivo?
Digestivo.
Digestivo. Is it just... I have to go lower and put a little English on the accent, but not like English-English, like English like throwing the ball English?
Exactly. Yeah. You have to do a little expression, a little curve.
I need to use my hands while I say it. I think that's going to be key.
Yes.
Tonight's episode, written by Brian Fuller and Steve Lightfoot, pure. No assist from a Child's Play author or anyone else. Just the two of them writing it pure. And directed by Adam Kane, who directed some Daredevil. And was looked like the cinematographer on Boondock Saints. So this, you know, I would have been happy if this was the series finale.
It felt like that.
Honestly. Yeah. And as time has passed, you know, we watched it twice. And as time has passed since we watched it, the more and more I've thought about it, I mean, they really have to top their mid-season finale for their series finale here. Because, yeah. I mean, it is looking more and more, at the very least, this show is over as it now sits. Season three is it for Hannibal as it now sits.
As it now stands.
So we are walking into a series finale.
Mm.
And that's okay. I'm okay with that. How are you two feeling?
I'm kind of right there with you, where... It did smack of a season finale. You know, there was sort of like, okay, if it ended here, I think we all would have been okay. Like it wrapped up a lot of stuff.
Wrapped up everything.
It was one of those things where it's like it got to that point, and then I was like, what the hell are we gonna do
now?
Where are we gonna go from here? And I am thinking it's gonna blow my mind. Because if this is where we're at in the middle of the season,
yeah,
or it might be wishful thinking. I would like to think that we're going to go on another amazing adventure to get us to the end of this season. We know what's coming up. So we're going to do a whole new storyline, and we're going to have new characters, and we're going to have a whole new series of interesting things to explore. So I just hope that it's just as visually amazing and stunning as all this has been.
How about you, Ophelia?
I think it could end right here. But I know that there's more, and I know that I want to see more from these particular creators and these people and their imaginations. I would like to see more of them on screen.
We would like to borrow their imagination for more seasons of television.
Yeah, just anything, yes. Really. I don't care what you're producing or directing. Just I want to see more of what you're doing. So I'm happy that there's more coming and that it didn't just get, you know, chopped in half. But I do feel like it was wrapped up. I feel like a lot of things came to a head, came to an end. There was a nice resolution, and we really could pick up from Silence of the Lambs right now.
Yeah.
Like where it's.
Well, no, we put in Red Dragon.
I mean, really we could.
And that's a perfect, you know, that is, we have been given the prequel.
Yeah.
It has been from start to finish. We now have all of it.
Yeah.
And so we could walk into. Easily, we could put in Manhunter, we could put in Red Dragon, mm-hmm. and we could feel like it was a continuation of this story.
Yeah.
It's amazing how they're able to weave in four books worth of characters and dialogue and make it all work so that when you get to this point, you're like, oh, wow, it works. I'm ready now for Red Dragon. Mm-hmm. You're like, it's all set up and it makes sense. And it's stunning. It's stunning that they were able to do that.
When I've always been a person who believes that Silence of the Lambs is the only perfect film in that series. Silence of the Lambs is the only truly great film in that mm-hmm. series. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people will wax on and on about the sublimeness of Manhunter. And there are some true moments of greatness in that extremely horrifyingly dated film, Manhunter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it may well be called 80s the movie.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of 80s.
It's Miami Vice. It was Miami Vice.
Yes.
And
well, I mean, a little more R-rated version of Miami Vice, but yes.
But that's always made it more a curiosity to me than a great film. Like, I can't look at that and...
I wasn't old enough to look at that when it was relevant.
Yeah,
you know?
Me neither.
So...
I mean, it was... I would not have been able to appreciate what it is at that point.
Yeah. Not the way that I can appreciate it now.
I think that's why that movie has, I don't consider it as sort of well-made in a well-rounded way as Silence of the Lambs, but I'm old enough for it to be culturally relevant to me.
But even culturally relevant, isn't it something, wouldn't you say you look back on that as this is a product of its time.
Exactly. You know, and that's
Silence
why that
Lambs
movie
exists
is special
outside,
to me.
I think. So you think the product of its time enhances the film for you?
Only because of when I experienced it. Okay. That was my first time with these characters.
Sure.
So it's really only special to me in that it is relevant to my timeline as an individual, that was the first movie I saw in the Thomas Harris, stories. My first experience with these characters came with that movie. So I like it not because it's a great movie. I don't think it's very well made, and it is shot in a very dated way. So it's only special because it has memories for me, or it has a significant place in the timeline because I remember seeing that years and years and years ago. But then Silence of the Lambs came out and like blew me away.
Silence of the Lambs is one of the first adult films I remember listening to my parents talk about with friends. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that increased my desire to see it, certainly. And the reason I brought all this up is Silence is a perfect film, pretty much. You know, the story of Red Dragon, the story of the book Hannibal, had never been done better than good, I think.
Yeah, there's certainly every other film has so many flaws,
right,
and doesn't seem to pick what it needs to pick out of the books in order to get its point across. It leaves a lot of stuff out. It's interesting because Silence of the Lambs was actually on like 2 nights ago. And Ronan and I were watching it, and I found myself like talking about it and going, okay, well, the reason why this is happening is because in the books, all this stuff has happened. And even though I was like filling in things, mm-hmm. you realize that what they have chosen makes sense in the film.
Oh yes, like, absolutely.
And unfortunately in movies like Hannibal and I don't know why they can't get a handle on any of the Red Dragons. it just seems like the characters sometimes don't quite fully, fully form,
right,
or what they've chosen to focus on and what they've chosen to cut out sometimes leaves you kind of hanging. If you don't know what's going on in between there, and that happens, I think a lot in Hannibal, where you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense when it goes from there to there, and it makes it kind of choppy, and Silence just seems to flow.
And so we will, at the end of this season, I mean, I have a lot of faith in Brian Fuller. I feel like this season so far is not as good as season two. I feel like season two may be one of the finest seasons of television I've ever seen. And taken in that case, I think his version of Red Dragon will be up to that par, which means we will have gotten exceptional adaptations of Red Dragon, Hannibal, and Hannibal Rising, leaving us the one perfect film in the Hannibal Lecter series that doesn't need to be revisited.
And I think we've had enough touches from Silence mixed in.
It's all over this episode,
Oh, totally. Yes.
So let's actually dig into the episode. I think we're going to do this in chronological order because it just feels like it deserves to be chronological order there. We open with the previously on sort of melds directly into the episode here, where Will is getting his head sawn open, but this time instead of Jack's silent scream, we hear Jack scream.
Yeah.
And we get that Jack through the distorted filter of Will. Man.
And the bone saw.
And the bone saw.
Yeah.
And what's really cool about that, and Brian Fuller tweeted this, he took that image of Jack's scream from a Francis Bacon painting, The Screaming Pope. Which, go to Google and look this up. It's also the image that was the direct inspiration for Heath Ledger's Joker.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Look up Screaming Pope over there. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Then the Questura comes in, again, led by Clouseau, the inspector who still does not get his own name. doing his best FBI hand gestures, you know, this way, this way, this way.
Yes.
See, I'm making him French because he looks like Clouseau.
I mean, he looks like Italian.
And, you know, he's far douchebaggier than Clouseau has ever been.
Yes.
And then Will looks up and sees the Wendigo.
Yeah.
And the Wendigo is cutting into his head.
Is cutting into him.
I thought it was amazing. Like, first, like, the cavernous of Soliato's apartment, that hallway with the rounded ceiling, as the Questura is, the for-hire Questura is coming down the hall, and you hear the bone saw getting louder and louder and louder, and you're just sitting there like, well, I know he gets out of it because I saw afterwards, but Jesus.
No, it was still on the edge of your seat, like, oh my God, when are they going to get in there? Just in the saw in his head, and just, and then no from Jack. It's even though you know everyone's going to get out of this, not everyone,
because Chio has clearly gotten a taste for murder as long as it's not Hannibal.
Yes,
I mean, that seems to be her entire modus operandi, is I will shoot and kill anyone
that gets in
but Hannibal.
Way. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, but, you know, I'm sure Jack is thankful.
Well, yes. And Hannibal surrenders very quickly when the Questura comes in. And the inspector is so smug as he talks about getting double for both of them.
Yes.
And Jack is to be Hannibal's last victim, while Il Mostro narrowly escapes the Questura.
I love how he does the little with the fingers. He got away by this much. Yes.
The good Dr. Lecter is once more in the wind, but he has left a last victim. Open him the way Dr. Lecter opened the other one.
Others.
What a
I think he said it. Open him all the way.
Thing.
Open him all the way.
What? I mean, what? I mean, he is still, I mean, I get that he's getting, I don't know that.
No, there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
It is over the top. It is overkill. It is not necessary for him to do
kill
it that
Jack.
Way.
Well, that's it.
He doesn't even, he doesn't have to kill Jack, but I mean, he wants it to, I think he felt a little bit like Jack was putting his nose in his business and he didn't like it. I mean,
when he was with Bedelia in the last episode.
So maybe he's just like, you know what? This is what you get for your arrogance.
It's like, you should have left. I told you to leave. You didn't leave. And now you're here. So now you're going to die.
Exactly.
And hey, this guy gets away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing happens to him.
Yeah.
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what would have happened to him? What would have happened to him?
Well, you know, Mason usually seems to like to kill these people instead of paying them.
Well, I don't think he would have gone to America. He would have sent his people.
Yeah. Well, but do you think that it's possible that
the inspector could have
led to an untimely end after Hannibal and Will?
Hey, maybe Bedelia dispatched. Will kill him.
Yeah.
You know, she is still in Florence, as far as we know.
Yeah, as far as we know, because she didn't pack a bag.
And she has a reason to kill him, too. He was being all handsy.
It's true. He got too fresh.
But Jack is saved by well-timed bullets from Chio on the rooftop across the way with her massive, massive gun.
Massive gun.
Yes.
When she comes in with that gun and then slowly turns it to Jack, it's like she has to go out
she has to
come
step
back
away
in.
Yeah. In order to actually like, aim it at him.
It's like in a video game when you turn the sniper rifle towards someone and it's just like, whoa, way too close.
Whoa.
Let me back it up a little bit here. I love the calmness of
that conversation. That's how you're using your sniper rifles in games. You're doing it wrong.
Well, I'm not good at that.
No.
So Jack's very calm. Wrong floor.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind coming over here and pulling this needle out of my neck?
I like the way he refers to her. That's her name. Your name is Wrong Floor.
Hey, Wrong Floor.
Hey, Wrong Floor.
Sup.
Sup. How you
Long
doing?
Long time no see.
And Jack confirms that he knows Hannibal and Will. They are identically different.
Yes.
Hannibal and Will.
What a great line.
I took that. A lot of people accuse that of being too obtuse. I took that as being they are exactly mirror images of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, it's black and white. They're both pure something, but not the same thing.
Yeah.
And they're most likely taking them to the U.S., to Maryland. I can even give you the address once you pull this needle out of my neck.
Out of my neck.
He's got a good bargaining chip.
He does. He does.
It's his only chip, and he's holding on to it.
Yeah.
It's like, I got nothing. Nope. Not going to help you.
I can help you, but.
Yeah. You got to make me want it. And Chio pulls the needle out. Jack gives her Muskrat Farms, the Verger estate. Chio gives him a gun.
Yeah, that was
very
nice.
Considerate.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he points out that it is not within Jack's interest at this point in stopping Chio.
True, but she didn't have to believe him.
That's true. So she takes her ridiculously huge rifle and leaves. Opening titles.
Yes.
When we come back, we got Margot and Alana in bed again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I loved the phone ringing through the glass top.
Yeah, wasn't
table.
That cool?
Yeah. That was a very nice touch.
And Alana is looking back sort of over the head of the bed, you know, leaning back, looking up. It's really, when she sees Hannibal's face in the shadows on the ceiling.
Yeah.
I didn't see Hannibal's face.
Oh,
I just saw, like, ink blots.
Oh, no, no. It's specifically Hannibal's face. We should rewatch
it. Okay, we should rewatch this. I didn't catch this.
It comes together. It's like abstract, and then for a moment, it's Hannibal's. You saw that too, right, Miko?
Yeah.
Okay, good. It wasn't just me seeing things.
No, I didn't see it.
Well, that's the good kind of abstractness, because it's not something that everyone will immediately pick up on.
Yeah.
But if you do see it, that's extra awesome. We get a lot of great time with Joe Anderson's Mason Verger. This is the showcase episode for this character, and I think he hits it out of the park. How about you?
Oh, yeah. This is his last episode.
I imagine we will not see Mason Verger again.
I imagine, no. Unless we do flashbacks. but he goes out with an amazing flourish.
He's a Bond villain in this episode.
Yes. You know, everything from, you know, smells like salvation, you know. He's got some wonderful lines in this and great moments.
He does.
Yeah.
Alana is telling Mason that telling Margot that Mason has what he wants.
Oh,
and
right.
It's time you get what you want.
Which is a theme. This has come up a couple of times.
What does Margot want?
What does Margot
get what she wants? But this is where Lana finds out that Hannibal and Will
Hannibal.
Been captured. And but Alana's playing it so cool.
She is. She doesn't seem. Margot seems more worried about Will than Alana does.
We've got time because Mason's a sadist.
A sadist.
He's going to want to play with them for
a while. Although, to be fair, she's probably peeved
that Will
was anywhere near Hannibal in the first place.
So here's the question: earlier in the season, Alana and Jack have that conversation on Will's front porch. Will is doing what he has to do. What is it that Alana feels Will had to do if her entire game has been trying to get Hannibal before Will gets to him?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because that was her motive here, right? Was to remove Hannibal from the board before Will becomes entangled again?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what she says in this episode, even. She says that I was trying to get to you before you got to Will, or before Will gets to you. That's what she tells Hannibal before she...
So I guess it's possible the point is that Will needs to go on this journey where he learns what he needs from Hannibal, what he doesn't need from Hannibal, I guess. But it seems a little hinky, her plan.
Yeah, her plan is not very ironed out.
Well, I think she was depending on things happening a certain way. 'Cause she even says... elsewhere in here that she was, expecting Jack and the FBI.
Right, to come to the rescue.
Rescue. I think that a lot of things happened in a timeline she hadn't anticipated. And she's been trying
to evolve.
She's trying too hard and she's trying to wing it. And it's not necessarily, when things zag aren't exactly working to her. To her benefit.
She's not as good at the manipulation as she would like to be.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I think she probably had not anticipated
Will going to Lithuania.
Right. I'm sure she didn't see Chio coming.
No, nobody saw that coming.
Yeah.
No, so, I think Alana's character, though, doesn't really lend to a good manipulator. She's just
that's
not her.
Yeah. And maybe it is. That's what she is this season. She's a pretender to the manipulation game.
Well, I mean, we've got her dressing in Hannibal-style clothes with the bold stripes. And
dressing Margot in Alana-style clothes.
Yes,
did you notice that last episode?
That.
Margot was wearing the wrap.
The patterned wrap dress.
Yeah.
I do like them together. And I feel like this episode gives us more to hang on.
It does.
It's not just kaleidoscopic trippy sex.
Yeah.
We actually get, okay, I sense a Thelma and Louise thing. They're doing this together. They've got that bond. I sense a little affection. I sense a relationship of convenience. Because Alana's spending all this time over at the Verger estate, and at least this way, she doesn't have to only hang out with Mason or Cordell. And you imagine how delightful that would be.
I'd be spending a lot of time in my room.
So we wrap back on the finale of the last episode, where Mason welcomes Hannibal and Will to Muskrat Farms. And he pulls that knife out and reminds us that his father used to check the depth of the fat. And, checks Hannibal's fat, but jamming the knife in his back.
Yeah.
But he thinks he's a little lean.
Gotta fatten him up.
Over the course of...
I don't know.
8 to 24 hours, it seems like, is going to be Hannibal's living situation.
Yeah.
8 hours is when he's going to lose his
everything
legs.
From the elbow.
Yeah,
and
elbow to... Yeah.
From the elbows to the knees.
No, elbows. He's going to lose his hands and his feet.
Yeah. Well, he. I think that's what Cordell said was coming next.
After that, they're going to have the pajama party.
Yes.
And then after that,
because he could be in shorties,
he's going to eat. Yes. He's going to eat more, and then they're going to age some. So there's no time to fatten Hannibal up. I mean,
I didn't understand where's the fattening going to happen.
It would certainly not be. I suppose you could take some fat from a pig and just jam that in, but really, there's no
It's not going to get to the meat. The meat won't be marbled in the same way.
Yeah, that takes time.
Hannibal is going to be a lean meal.
Yeah, that's a time thing, and they don't have time. Or at least they're not. Well, I guess they don't have time, because if anybody were to raise suspicions, they don't want evidence lying around. So
that's true.
They got to get rid of it soon.
So then we get into the whole Hannibal as pig metaphor of the episode, where they take him into the pig corral in that barn, and we talk about how it's more trouble to move a semi-wild pig against its will than to capture a man. And Mason gives Will all sorts of shit about being disemboweled by tusked animals.
Yeah, like, you should have known better. You watched out for the tusks.
A tusked beast instinctively disemboweled.
Indeed. And I love the funny thing about Mason is he's showing a sort of respect to Hannibal, but at the same time, not at all. You know, he's talking about how the best of all pigs is Hannibal Lecter. The most impressive he's ever seen.
But Hannibal seems to be pleased by this.
Oh, Hannibal is having...
He's eating it up.
He is having more fun in this episode than anybody else. You know, Mason thinks he's having the time of his life, but actually Hannibal Lecter is loving almost every moment here.
I love the way Hannibal smiles.
I know.
Through this entire
episode. Mads Mikkelsen, I don't think, has ever smiled so much on this series.
Very true.
But we get the wonderful line, "We're going to have some good, funny times, Dr. Lecter."
Yes.
for a brief moment, only long enough for Mason to gloat that Jack is dead. He tells Alana that Jack is dead, and that he hopes there's some satisfaction in being the final victim of the Chesapeake Ripper.
Mm, yeah.
But again, only long enough for him to gloat a moment before Margo comes in talking about how the feces is flying in Florence, which is a lovely alliteration. Thanks, Margo. That was wonderful.
I'm sure she enjoyed thrusting that pin into his little happy balloon there.
But at the same time, I think Margo might be a little panicky. She has to pull this off as well in order to get past this whole horrible situation. Yeah. She does not have a plan.
It does look like they're really worried about Jack talking.
Yeah. And just like in the book Hannibal, Mason registered a whole bunch of harassment complaints to the FBI about Jack. And in the book, he registered it about Clarice to keep her out of the farm.
Yeah.
I love you got the alliteration about the feces is flying in Florence, but there was also, when she's discussing, you know, being found out, she talks about how they will soon hear the first squeal, I think she says. And I don't know, that kind of tickled me when she's using all the
lots of pig talk.
There's so much pig talk, but
well, the Virtues have spent a lot of time around pigs.
It's true, but I thought that little quip was nice.
There's a lot of great moments in there. How, you know, when they're trying to find out how, you know, what he's going to do with Hannibal, you know, and that he's going to have this long drawn out thing, and you know, the line, "Play with your food too long, it always bites back."
Yes,
you know.
And Mason says, "I'm not playing Dr. Bloom."
Yes.
And Alana says, Hannibal is.
Hannibal is always playing.
He's always playing.
there's a lot of repetition over the course of this series, the way musical scores will repeat sections of score. And we had another dressing montage in this episode where Hannibal, Will, and Mason are all being dressed. And I like that everybody is being dressed in this scene. Nobody is dressing themselves.
Themselves, yeah.
And when Hannibal is wheeled into that dinner table, he's got the biggest smirk on his face. Yeah. Just like, well, this is lovely.
Yes.
Look at all of this. Look at all the trouble you've gone to. I'm going to kill you so bad.
Right. And I'm going to enjoy every moment of it.
He gets the oysters put in front of him.
Yeah.
Really fancy-like.
And did you notice? I noticed this, and I don't know if I noticed it the first time around. I noticed the second watch-through. his hand is loose.
Yeah, Mason wants him to be able to eat dinner loose. With him. Yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me? Of all the things, he could have gotten out right then.
Probably.
Yeah.
Hannibal could have freed himself.
I think Hannibal just wants to see where it goes.
Perhaps.
Yeah, he's curious.
Meanwhile, Will is done. Will has never been more done over the course of this series than he is right now here. You know, with you're going to eat him
with
my face.
My face.
With my face?
And then Mason has the great line, yes, I got a taste for it after the two of you had me eat my nose.
Yes.
So we get two stories here. First is the Hannibal talking about the parallels between Mason and Jezebel.
Oh, yeah.
Because dogs ate Jezebel's face.
Mm-hmm.
And he even strokes Mason a little bit. That, you know, as a follower, as a reader of the good book, you will know this story.
Mm-hmm.
And Mason again talks about, you know, well, Jezebel wasn't right with the Riz, you know.
Or else he would have provided her with a new face.
With a new face. Like he provided Mason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we get the story about the German cannibal. This is a true story.
This is a true story.
About
I
the guy
perked up when they started talking about this.
He answered an ad from a guy wanting to be eaten.
Yep.
And he ate him. Yeah. And apparently, I didn't hear this part before, but according to Mason, the penis was overcooked.
It was overcooked.
Which Hannibal almost laughs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than overcooked penis.
You think that's why Hannibal was laughing there?
I'm pretty sure there's a song about this. Rammstein. Oh, has a song
overcooked
about
penis? Is that
no?
Is that the track on the Hot Darkness album?
No,
Hot Darkness.
We got a track list
that was awesome
sent to
by
us
the way.
For. I got to pull that up.
Thank you to the fan that did that.
Yes,
awesome.
That was perfect.
But he goes on with the overcooked penis. They ate it anyway. They had to. They committed, but they didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'm committed to enjoying every bite of you.
He's owed it now that after he's had a reluctant meal of overcooked penis, he is ready for this.
But Hannibal says it's dangerous to get exactly what you want. What will you do after you eat me?
Mm-hmm.
And Will, again,
I love Will.
No fucks.
No fucks,
no
fucks to give.
You could, you know, wreck up some foster homes, torment some children.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep, yep, yep.
And when Cordell comes over and talks about, Hannibal wants to know what he'll eat first.
Oh, yes.
And Cordell talks about that first they will eat his hands and feet sizzling on a Promethean barbecue.
Yes.
And I think Hannibal is actually feeling the respect of how detailed this plan is.
I was also wondering, though, if the whole time Cordell is talking about this, that somewhere in Cannibal's mind he's
in
going,
Cannibal's mind?
That was perfect.
Why would you choose that? What? This guy's a hack.
I felt like, I think he could appreciate Cordell's trying, but he did seem... Like later they talk about tongue and preparing the tongue, and it sounded
that
like
one Hannibal is impressed by. I think
I don't think he is.
No,
I think it's one of those. Oh, good for you.
Yeah, that's the way he's what I got.
Yeah, the way he said it was very sardonic. I guess he wasn't really impressed by his choices because he was basically like, oh, well, it's very clean and simple, but not to say that that's not what most chefs usually say, simple is better and less is more and all of that. But I still do feel like he was like, oh, well, you know, nice try. That's not the best way to prepare tongue.
Right. But if that's the best thing you can come up with, it's not bad.
He's like, I'm not here to give you cooking lessons.
Right. It was sort of like the bemused attitude you would give, you know, like a junior chef or even a child.
Yes, yes.
Like they're so proud of what they've come up with.
Exactly.
But to you know, the master chef, it's like, oh, that's so cute, honey.
It's like, I don't want to dash your dreams of cooking people. So I'm just going to let you continue to believe that this is a good idea.
Right.
Okay, so I found we're going to take a quick segue here.
Segue.
And this is the track listing for the Hot Darkness album that we talked about last episode. And this was from Twitter follower the Michael McCoy. So here is the track listing. The Raven Stag, Slicing the Ginger, Jacking Up the Law.
Jacking the Law, Jacking the
Bella,
Law.
Bella, Bella, Bella. Whimsy. I like this one. Lend Me an Ear.
I love that one.
Not Equals, Not Cannibalism. If I Had Lips, I Would Smile.
That was a good one.
C, In the Pantry. That one's cheeky.
It is yes. cheeky.
This is the best one, but it's also sad.
It is sad.
Cats in the Cradle.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Good Funny Times We Could Have Had. And then The Wendigo.
I love it.
So yeah, that was awesome. I was yeah. very excited by this. What was the band?
Oh, I forgot. The
album was
the
Hot Darkness, but I forgot the band name.
Oh, there, my God.
There have been so many over the yeah. years.
I'd have to look back in my notes.
Yeah, I think it was a play on Will and Hannibal's togetherness, but yeah. I don't know exactly what we had said.
Okay, so after this Promethean barbecue, they'll have a pajama party. You'll be in shorties by then.
Yep.
Yes.
So Mason asks Cordell to moisturize Will.
He's looking a little dry.
Yes. There was a little touch of it puts the lotion on its
skin. Oh, yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
But,
yeah. absolutely.
Oh, my God. I did not see that
no,
coming.
No, did
when
not.
When Will leaps, lunges at Cordell, you know, just digs into his cheek oh, and yep. spits it on the plate.
Yeah.
Yep.
Will's field of fucks is thoroughly barren.
Yeah, he's done. He has harvested it all. Not even a trip to the Wicker Man will replenish his field of fucks.
He's like, you're going to take my face off?
Yeah.
And you're gonna...
It's Nicolas Cage. Oh. I want to take his face
off.
Off. Face off. And oh, unbelievably, God. We get far more horrifying imagery of faces coming off on this NBC series
True.
Than we did in the R-rated action,
yeah.
the kind of movie yeah. where you'd expect
to see this.
To see horrifying yeah. face-off stuff. That's the most horrifying thing in that is Nicolas Cage smoking a cigarette with his face off.
Yeah. Off.
That's and that's it. Not that horrifying. It's actually kind no. of funny. But Mason is nonplussed. Well, no pajama nope. party for you then.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. He got his pajama party privileges taken away for that.
So I've noticed on this show, they don't like to oh. bandage things up. You,
no,
they want us to see the wound.
Yeah.
Like Cordell sews his cheek back
well,
on and then
be
is
fair,
so badass.
He has to do that if he wants the skin to heal. It has to be done instantly.
But can't he bandage it afterwards? Couldn't he
oh,
put
okay.
something over
right,
it?
Right, right, right.
Like
okay.
later, it actually looks somewhat healed.
Right.
And I don't even remember seeing the cheek missing, cheek issue on Cordell's face-off moment.
No, it was sewn. It was sewn up.
Yeah. Well, oh, so badass.
We skipped past one of my favorite, favorite things.
Miss?
So we've got them dressing for dinner.
Yes.
We've got them being wheeled in for dinner. And we have Mason saying that Hannibal must be famished because he snatched Will right out of his mouth.
Yes. That was a great
I
line.
Was like, oh, okay, this is good.
And Will, yeah, Will's so just good. There with that frown on his face, just sort of rolling his eyes back and forth. It's like his eyes could not roll further. They'd fall right out of his head. So done.
Yeah. I think he's a little bit not... amused by the flirtatious
no,
Hannibal
no,
and Mason.
Like, fuck you all.
Yeah.
yeah.
All of
well,
them.
Everyone's being all glib and
yes.
he's fallen from a train. He's had his forehead cut open.
He is nothing but scar tissue driven by erotic vengeance at this point.
Thoroughly.
the hot verger brand on Hannibal's back, oh. That was a rough thing there where Hannibal won't even give Cordell the satisfaction of screaming.
Hannibal's so totally badass.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he's been through worse.
But Mason would have preferred to brand his face. In fact, he campaigned to be allowed to brand pigs' faces.
Mm-hmm. Against the humane treatment of animals.
And it's very important to Mason that Hannibal have the full pig experience.
Yes.
This is his vacation package, is the full pig experience on Verger Farms. That could be a ride.
Oh, it
at
could
Hannibal,
be.
Land.
Hannibal Land.
We did have an awesome Twitter follower who also just randomly, like 3 weeks ago, started tweeting out rides for Hannibal Land.
Oh, awesome.
I like the full pig experience.
At
Muskrat
Farms. Yeah. Muskrat Farms is sort of like a land of Hannibal Land, fantasy land.
Oh, yeah.
So Muskrat Farms is one. Florence.
Yep,
is one.
Another.
Lithuania. It can be stately Lecter Castle at the center.
Instead of, like, it could be kind of like Cinderella's castle.
Yes. Instead of a moat around it, it's got a graveyard.
Yeah. Yes. Oh,
and
that's
and it has the walkthrough that's the with the fireflies of Hannibal's life.
Oh, yes, where you see him eat Misha.
Yes.
I'm hoping we learn more about that in the second half of the season.
Yes, because they teased us, and it's like they answered things, but then left us hanging.
And then
we've been watching
spoilers, and they talked more about it during the spoilers that we watched. What was it? The the morgue.
There's a series
Post-mortem.
Called Postmortem, hosted by Scott Thompson.
But there's lots of spoilers, so beware of spoilers.
It's just this little, like, 5-minute thing on YouTube. After each episode, he sits and interviews people. And
they talk
Hannibal
way
is,
ahead.
Hannibal made it very clear, not Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen made it very clear that
he embodies that character.
That
so
he
well.
Did eat Misha.
Yes.
But he didn't kill her.
But he didn't.
Right. Someone killed her.
Well, there's some other spoilers that I won't mention, but they go into other details about what has happened to her. So I felt like that was like, oh, so how are we going to know this? If the actors know this, that means somehow
it could be them talking about
backstory.
It with Brian Fuller. Okay. And that happens a lot, especially like on dense shows. Game of Thrones does that a lot where the actor is talking about motivation with the producers.
What's my motivation?
And we find out, okay, well, here's some backstory that the audience will never know, but it's for you.
Yeah.
But it's important for them to know this
backstory. I wouldn't be surprised if that is the extent of what we learn about Misha. Mm-hmm. Maybe Chilton is going to get some information, but it may be thoroughly incorrect. It may just be Hannibal fucking with him over...
Exactly. He'll make something up.
Yeah.
But back to the full pig experience.
Yeah, the whole pig experience. Cordell is really fucking proud of himself and really, really impressed by Mason's visionary-ness.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like an excellent toady.
I loved how they went through everything he was going to do with him while he was tied up.
Especially the loins and ribs being aged for flavor.
Oh,
yes.
Then he does the some things are best saved for last.
And don't worry, every part of you will be cooked to perfection.
And I think Cordell really intends to honor Hannah. You know, it's the honoring every part of the deer.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us all the way back full circle to Garrett Jacob Hobbs.
Yeah.
Mason may not be honoring any of this, but I think there is possibly part of Cordell that intends to actually cook Hannibal the way he deserves to be cooked.
Yeah.
Or he's going to try.
And that's, well, yes, we still don't know if Cordell's a good cook. I don't know. Hannibal didn't actually say anything about whether the oysters were any good.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I just, thought it was kind of funny that when he says that line, he kind of eyes Hannibal's crotch for a second there.
Well, yes.
I did not catch that either.
Yes,
maybe
he does.
Cordell is hoping to have a not overcooked.
We're going to cook it right this time.
I'm cooking it right this time.
Mason talks so much about genitals in this episode.
He does.
I mean, almost every scene. has Mason talking about genitals.
Yep.
And when we get back to Mason, it's him and Margot talking about maybe I'll feed the genitals to the eel. I don't know. Maybe,
yeah.
He should have something too.
And then he asks Margot how long they've been an item. Apparently Cordell's been watching and saying some stuff about Margot and Alana being together.
Yeah.
That gossipy asshole.
Exactly. That's kind of creepy.
So I'm sure you've had a chance to check under the hood by now. How's the uterus?
Yes.
Are the hips childbearing? Roomy? Which is a Silence of the Lambs reference. The childbearing roomy that is part of the discussion about one of the girls that Buffalo Bill got. When Hannibal asks if she was roomy in the hips. We may be reading too much into this, but from what I've heard Brian Fuller say is whenever he's writing a scene, he just starts paging through the books looking for interesting prose.
It fits very well.
It does.
That's what I've been loving about this.
And I feel like this is the best Shining reference this show has done, and the show has done a bunch of Shining references when he says, "Oh, you've got a big surprise coming for you, Margot."
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things that Nicholson says to Wendy in The Shining is when she's going out to get the snow cat. "Oh, you've got a big surprise coming to you, Wendy." Love that.
They love doing Shining
they
references.
Do. So here's where we learn about the surrogate and how he took her eggs and didn't Humpty Dumpty them. Just found a new basket.
Yep.
And I mean, every Joe Anderson is chewing all of the scenery in this. You know, I mean, like he, you know, when I told you I wanted to give you a baby, a virgin baby, yours and mine. I love it.
Every time he does that, it sends chills up my spine.
And the surrogate is resting on the farm.
Yeah.
But Margot, don't think too long,
too
smiley.
Too long, smiley, yes. Which is great. I mean, she recovers because when he says that to her,
yeah.
Because he's already going on and on. Like you said, he's chewing up the scenery. She's gotten to the point where she's like, "Land the plane, Mason."
Yes. They've been waving you down for a long time and you are nearly out of gas.
Exactly. But when
quit
he comes
doing
out
loop
with
the loops.
Yeah, enough with this circling and doing all your just get to the effing point. But her initial reaction, she looks so shocked and scared.
Yeah. Ophelia and I were talking last week before this episode aired, because, you know, we've read the books and this episode ends in the direction that the Hannibal, the book ends. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling like Mason is not a threat to Margot at the moment. Mm-hmm. So she didn't need to dispatch him. And so I was saying that something needs to happen. Something really bad. Mason needs to do something really bad to her.
Yeah.
To push her to be the one that kills him. And not Cordell, like in Hannibal the movie.
Yeah.
And not Hannibal Lecter, which would have been the easy one. But to push Margot to actually be responsible for Mason's death. Something really bad needed to happen. And dear God, I did not anticipate this really bad thing that happened here.
Oh, totally. I was not anticipating.
But before we get there,
wow.
Before we get to the surrogate on the farm, they just left Will alone in the dining room.
Yeah, they just left
him. Like they forgot about him.
I mean, it's like a child in a high chair.
They kind of, well, he's not going anywhere.
He's just sitting there. And Alana comes in, and Will is just like, "Oh, well, dear God, now what do you want?" And the discussion of her being Mason's psychiatrist, and is that part of his therapy or yours?
Yours.
And they're both working through some issues. Mm-hmm.
But Alana's focusing on survival.
Yes.
Right now.
And this is where we learn that Alana's intention was to have Mason grab Hannibal before Will got there. Mm-hmm. But Will has one of the most wonderful lines in the episode here where he says, almost as ugly as what Mason wants to do to us is the fact that he can do it with the tacit agreement of people sworn to uphold the law.
Yes.
And that's almost Will indicting himself for the things he let Hannibal get away with last season, mm-hmm. as he was getting closer to snaring him. And this is, you know, where Will tells Alana she has to evolve. She has to spill blood, either by your own hand or someone else's.
Mm-hmm. It's time to be responsible. And we can't keep doing what we're doing. You know, this is it. The time is at hand. Mason can't be allowed to be able to move everybody on the chessboard the way he wants to and the way he has with all his money. You know, it's come to a head.
So we're back in the barn, listening to the wacky verger music.
And that amazing shot.
The overhead shot?
The red floor and the circular cages.
This is something I imagine most of the audience has been waiting for a long time. Hannibal is naked, mm-hmm. on his knees, tied up.
He's stressed up.
I could almost hear the squeeze from across the internet.
I think I preferred the previous hanging up naked than the downward.
You mean Jesus naked?
Hannibal. Jesus naked, I guess.
Are you were talking about last season with Hannibal.
No, earlier when Cordell is talking to Hannibal, yeah. talking about how he's going to be eaten. There is a cleverly placed sort of metal bar, but if you look closely, Hannibal is actually not wearing anything. The bar covers his crotch area.
And you looked very closely.
Yes, I did.
So Margot comes to visit him, and I get the feeling here, and I really like this performance from Catherine Isabel, because I got the feeling she had no idea why she was coming to visit him.
She looks very distressed.
Yeah, she's sort of out of plan, mm-hmm. and Hannibal's given her good advice in the past. So
and they talk about their discussions.
Yes, the have you started taking the chocolate, as Mason likes to say, after you fought him for so long? Then are we in therapy now?
Yes.
And Hannibal has the line, Mason will deny you. He will always deny you.
Yes,
you know you'll have to kill him. Mm-hmm. And I really like that, you know, she acknowledges she can't trust Hannibal to do it for her. Because last time Hannibal was going to do it, instead he had Mason feed his face to the dogs and then broke his neck.
Yeah, you know, he didn't quite follow through.
There was not a lot of follow through there. No. But I really like, I'd never deny that I did it. I'd write a letter gloating about how much I enjoyed killing him myself.
Yeah, it's basically saying, you have full license to go do this thing. Because I'll take the fall for you. I already have all these other murders that I'm going to have to take the fall for. What's one more, as he says? So it is. It's sort of like, okay, I could not possibly package this better for you, Margot. Just go do it.
Alana comes in and has her action movie moment where she tranks the guard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like how they had the Bonacera. It was almost similar to the...
Yes.
The beginning of the season. And she has that fantastic coat on. She's quite a vision when she comes around, because she's got the white coat with the amazing black pattern on it, and then it's got a patterned hem to it. She's stunning when she comes around that corner.
And I love the image when she crouches down, like right in front of Hannibal, that he's looking down but up, and she's in the clear position of power.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she was trying to save Will from him, but now he's the only one who can save Will. Promise me you'll save him.
He's like, I always keep my promises.
Yeah, that's when we get the threat.
Well, a lot of people have been talking about this. In Mizumono, Hannibal says he's going to kill Alana. He did not promise to kill Alana, did he?
You know what? I don't think he promises. Because but he whispers in her ear.
The dialogue.
We don't know what he says.
In Mizumono?
When she's laying on the ground outside.
Well, I think what everybody's getting all excited about is when Hannibal says, if you walk away, I have no intention of calling on you, but if you stay, I will kill you.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, yeah, but we don't know what he bends down to whisper something to her, doesn't he?
No, he takes the jacket.
The jacket.
Oh, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless he's considering that threat as a promise. Like maybe just because he didn't say, I promise to do this. I wonder if he's sort of saying that I'm a man of my word. So it echoes that there is like a dun, dun, dun. Like, oh my God.
Well, and that makes me question if Alana's going to make it through the rest of the season.
Yeah. It does definitely put a lot of tension in the air in that, oh, so somewhere down the road.
Or, maybe she's the old friend Hannibal is going to have for dinner years from now.
Yes.
But I really love this moment. And all he needs is one arm free. And Hannibal's so in control here. You know, he is puppet mastering this entire situation from the least powerful position in the room.
Totally.
He suggests ripping some of his hair out to put in Mason's hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
I believe that's from the book, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And when Alana yanks the hair out, oh, wow.
Yeah.
She's pissed.
She pulls a lot of hair out.
She gets out a lot of frustration.
But after this exchange, could I have ever understood you?
No.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So good. So the ladies leave, and Hannibal cuts himself free. And there's an animated GIF of this moment where he stands up and takes the harness around his neck off. Mm-hmm. And he's breathing slowly, and you see the full spectrum of emotions that Mads Mikkelsen puts into this character over this really abbreviated and calm moment. And I can almost see him going into that... you know, sort of like when Will goes into the pendulum mode, you hear that background music.
Yeah.
I could hear Goldberg variations there. Hannibal is slowing his heart rate. He's slowing his breathing. Just like in Silence of the Lambs, he is going to do some shit now. He is going to walk in there and own Muskrat Farm.
Yes. I know. As I was watching that transition, it's like I wrote, the monster that at first Hannibal is loose, then the monster is loose.
Ooh, I like that.
Because there is this transition where this is the person who's been talking to Alana and Margot and very calmly and very assertively telling everybody what to do. But now that time is over, and once he is fully free, and the way the music sounds, there's this transformation where something colder and more calculated and darker seems to happen.
And you just see so much there. There's so much depth
in
that
definitely.
Performance there.
Yeah.
So Mason is wheeled in to the surgery room, which is one of the most popular rooms on the Verger estate, apparently.
Yes.
In his red jammies. and he's telling the story about how Cordell said he could have had a new face grown for him, but he wanted Will's.
Yeah,
he was watching as he cut his own face off, thinking, that's a nice face.
That's a nice face.
What the fuck?
Because, you know, that's what you do. When you're high on all sorts of drugs.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
So as Mason is going under, He again gives him the, have you accepted Jesus, Mr. Graham?
Mr. Graham.
Do you have faith? I have. I'm free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. It's so bizarre.
I mean, I suppose there's nothing better than a monster for Christ.
A monster, exactly. Who covets, apparently.
He does covet. He covets a lot.
A lot. And then you get even creepier Cordell.
Oh, yeah. Cordell is immobilizing Will's body, but he'll feel everything. So that's a thing you can do?
Oh, it is. That is definitely a thing you can do. There have been... It can actually... Oh, you want to hear some really creepy stuff. It can happen to you. There are certain people who are sort of, I guess... It's kind of an immunity to anesthesia.
I've heard this, yes.
Where you'll wake up in the middle of a surgery.
But your body
you'll be immobilized, but you can feel everything, but you can't tell anybody. Yeah. I remember the first time I went, I knew about this before I had my first surgery. And I remember going into my first surgery going, please don't let me be one of those people. Please don't let me be one of those people.
Well, that's horrifying.
I don't want to know.
That is horrifying.
And if it wasn't horrifying enough... Cordell just belabors the point with, I'm going to cut off your face without anesthesia.
Without amnesia. Anesthesia. As if you didn't get what I was going to do now.
Let me just keep talking. Now, be sure to tell me if it hurts.
And Will's face, again, he has no fucks left to give.
I don't know. His eyes widened a bit.
Yeah.
So I think he was feeling it. I think he was giving some fucks. He just couldn't let anybody know.
He found a few right at that moment.
It was a weak harvest.
Only right as the scalpel goes into his cheek,
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Along the dotted line.
So we don't get to see what the monster did, but Hannibal is covered in blood.
Covered in blood,
With what looked like a bat covered in hooks.
Yeah, I thought I saw... a hammer, like a hook of a hammer, some sort of tool. But you said you saw like a nail bat.
Nail bat.
Like, okay.
Hannibal drew nail bat and zombicide, and now he's excited.
Yeah. He's okay. Just killed some zombies.
But he steps into the courtyard and the Wendigo whirring happens.
Yes.
The soundtrack for this episode, I mean, really all across the board, it's Brian Reitzel. It's amazing.
Yes.
But the soundtrack for this episode and the last episode, the reprises of Blood Feast, which is the extended final track in Mizumono. It's the elongated version of Goldberg Variations that we've heard a number of times. And that whirring, man, that whirring is terrifying.
Just gets you in the gut. It's just...
That's the bull roar.
Yeah,
the bull roar. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about pigs.
Oh, dear. Yep.
Margo and Alana find the surrogate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A pig draped on like a red bed draped in red linens with a piglet mobile above it.
Yeah. A little over the top there.
Oh. That scene.
That's amazing.
Okay. So there's a few things here that we need to discuss.
Biology.
Well, yes, biology will come into it.
Okay.
First of all, my first assumption is Mason found and paid a surrogate to carry the baby. This takes place roughly 9 months after
the accident.
So right away, Mason found a surrogate. Mason does want a child, so he took care of that through his channels. The baby was born dead or something happened. Mason took the baby and thought, it'd be fun. Let's jam it in a pig. Okay. That's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. What most of the internet seems to believe is that Margo's eggs were put in this basket and fertilized with Mason's vital sperms, and a baby was the fetus grew to term in the pig. Now, this is, we've been asked to swallow a lot from this show.
Interesting that you would use that right after talking about sperm.
Go Spitters ahead. Are quitters.
No, that's right. You don't strike me as a quitter.
So, it wouldn't be the most surprising thing to me that Brian Fuller wants us to believe that Mason managed to have a pig as a surrogate. But then, on Twitter, one of the writers of the show thought he would set the record straight that this baby is Will's baby that was taken out of Margot after the crash and implanted into this pig. And that I don't buy. That one, you know, the other two are craziness, but that one, I don't go there.
Okay. Yeah.
Thoughts, ladies.
Okay. You're asking for a lot, first of all, for...
Is this a bridge too far?
This is asking for way too much.
It's a uterus first of all, too far.
You're asking for something that's...
Waving your uterus around like a loaded
weapon.
Never
been done before.
Right.
To the best of our knowledge, and certainly to anybody who practices ethical medicine. And I'm sure that there have been plenty of people who don't and have not. And if you believe all of the urban legends and stretches of the imagination, I'm sure that there is some sort of crazy doctor out there who at some point has tried to do
maybe in the late 30s, early 40s. Maybe in Germany.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's possible. You know, and
I mean, pigs are supposedly the most human like bodies. No,
I mean, okay, anatomy wise,
yeah,
the chest cavity. Yes, you're correct. Okay. They actually do use pigs as anatomical models for a lot of chest surgeries
and for myth busting.
And for myth busting, that is correct. they have. Their rib cages are very similar to ours. Their intestinal positioning is very similar to ours. So yes, that's part of the process when you're talking about surrogacy. But the other part is immune response.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Your body is likely to reject something that's foreign. And I was reading, I did some research on this, and...
Immediately, almost before the episode ended, Ophelia went into research mode.
I made notes to myself. So apparently humans, because we share the blood in the placenta with the baby, we actually produce, I had it up here, but it's a type of immune response where basically our body is saying, don't attack foreign things. Because if you attack a foreign thing, you're going to kill your own baby.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because it's only 50% your DNA and 50% someone else's DNA. So we actually have a response that actually makes humans better at interspecies surrogacy.
Really?
Because of that response. So it actually promotes a foreign species in the uterus because your body is saying, don't attack foreign things. Don't do it. Now, there have been cases, and I want to say it has something to do with the Rh that people get tested for at the beginning of pregnancy. And if they test positive for this, they have to be given immunosuppressors so that they don't reject the fetus.
Okay.
And it's actually much more difficult in other types of species, pigs being one of them, because they don't share placental the bloodstream is actually separated between the baby and the mother.
Really?
So it's more likely that the body would reject the foreign species and foreign DNA because the body is going to recognize it as foreign because it doesn't have this type of response that humans do.
Mm-hmm.
And not just humans, but you know, that was the example that I looked up. So if you're talking about so that basically covers the one of the three crazy theories, which is having a baby or an egg fertilized inside the pig.
Right.
Now, the third one you were talking about, how it being Will's baby. Okay. Wow. Like you have to keep everything intact, first of all, coming out of somebody who just went into a car accident. And who's
Margo's surgery was on the farm.
It's true.
In the Verger surgery room.
I'm not saying that. I mean, he could have a helicopter, a pig helicoptered anywhere, but that's not the stretch.
Helicopter me a pig.
Right? No, that's not the stretch of the imagination. The part where you have to take out a full umbilical cord from a human and attach that somehow to the inside uterus of a pig and not have that instantly rejected, because you've got, like, you have more of a chance when it's an egg and a sperm being fertilized rather than an entirely, like, large foreign body being implanted.
It would have been a large foreign body. It would have been very early on, because Will and Margot had just gotten together.
Okay, fair enough.
We're talking weeks into the gestation process.
But you're also talking about an embryo that has been sharing blood.
Yeah. And we're also likely talking about Cordell doing it.
Okay, yeah. And then we're talking about putting from one environment where you share blood into another environment where you don't share blood. So you are going to have to rig that in a way where you've got a blood supply. And that just opens up a whole mess of other things. And I'm sure any surgeons out there or OBGYNs who
are listening, we would like to hear from our audience here.
We'll concur that's the part that doesn't make as much sense. You're taking from an entirely different environment that operates differently, specifically in the uterus.
There's also the fact that the pig looks dead.
The pig does look dead,
yeah.
So,
well, the baby is also dead.
And the baby
is dead. So,
yeah.
You know,
and it's under like a heat lamp. I don't know what all these red lights are. It reminds me of like a heat lamp at a restaurant.
Cool. Well, it could be.
like, what are they trying to
tanning the skin?
Whatever. It doesn't look good.
So let's.
Ah, gross.
Let's first be impressed that Brian Fuller has created something that have such diverse opinions about what actually happened. Leading us there,
sure,
that we can all believe the version that we are willing to accept.
I'm going with version number one, where there's a dead baby gets put into a dead pig,
just for the laughs,
for shits and giggles, because
just to mess with her,
because that's
and it is horrible.
Yeah,
I mean it is. So Brian Fuller early on, before the season, had talked about how he was going to top the turducken.
This
season. And the turducken, for those who don't remember, because this is a silly way of referring to it, was the horse with the woman inside, with the bird inside the woman.
With the bird inside the woman, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, Margot's pig baby.
Pretty horrific.
I did not see that coming.
No, up the ante.
And, yeah.
So I'm going to go with the surgical scar from implanting the babies underneath the pig, so we can't see it.
Maybe because that would be more horrifying.
Yeah, I'm going with that.
And that's kind of how I was approaching it, was not that, you know, any of this was actually possible, that I was willing to thoroughly prop open this window of disbelief with everything I had.
Waving the pig baby in. Like, come on, quickly, the window is closing.
It's going to close any second now. Merely because it's horror movie.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Like magic.
This is 70s horror movie.
Yes.
This is
exactly
horrifying.
When odd things were being
stuff you would never ever expect to see.
House of a Thousand Corpses is brought to mind.
Yeah, definitely.
Or even a lot of the stuff from like the late 70s, early 80s, where women were birthing. All number of odd, unusual
alien species
things.
No, men birth the aliens.
Just mutants.
Because alien is a metaphor for men's fear of birth.
Yeah, there were a lot of. I can remember all the titles of all these little evil things that were.
Do you remember It Lives?
Yes. That's one of the ones I'm thinking of.
That was a Larry Cohen movie, right? Larry Cohen wrote It Lives, I think.
I remember the movie, but I don't remember who did it.
Anyway.
Yep.
So the fetus has no vitals, according to the monitor, because it's dead.
Yeah.
Or is it a baby at that point? If it's still inside, is it a fetus?
When
is it a baby?
Oh, God.
When does life begin?
Oh, wow. You want to open up that can of worms on here. Well,
we know when life ends.
I'm going to go with a purely scientific.
Yes, please. Give me the legitimate scientific.
See, even that is wishy-washy.
It's a gray area.
But
okay.
But let's just say if it got birthed and dead,
yeah.
Then I guess it's still a fetus.
Okay. In any case,
it died before it came. It took a first breath.
One of the things we learned in these post-mortem videos is Caroline DeVernis actually had to cut this pig carcass open.
Yeah.
This was a real pig.
Yep.
That got cut open. Not a living pig, obviously.
Right.
But this was an actual pig that got cut
open. They didn't say that. They just said it was a really expensive pig. So it could have actually been a prosthetic pig. It was just
expensive. A really elaborate prosthetic. But, yeah. And she didn't know
exactly
how deep she had to go because she had to pull back layers and find
that makes me feel like maybe it was a real pig, actually.
Yeah, that sounds like it was the real thing.
Because they had to instruct her on how to peel back the layers of fat and go through the intestines to get to the uterus.
It may be a very elaborate prosthetic pig.
It would have to be extremely elaborate, but it's not unheard of because we want to go back to what we're talking about, bones. They actually have they talk about the expense budget just for creating the corpses, and you can tell in the episodes where they had the budget for a really fancy dead thing and no budget, because I have seen some where I was like, oh my god, that looks like a cadaver I've worked on, and then you know, there's some episodes where you're like,
somebody went to the Halloween store.
Yeah,
the day
like this,
after
this
Halloween.
Literally looks like something I could have made out of paper mache. This is this is not good. But
like some mom has made for the Halloween party.
Exactly. Then, this is going to go on your
mom. You made me the best pig with a baby in it ever.
But I mean, I guess that would be the truth. It would be more expensive to make a fake prosthetic pig like this.
Than to actually buy a pig. Yeah. Mm.
But they are expensive to buy them whole, because in my forensics class, we had a couple simulations, and that's where we got them.
Hoping we learn more when the Blu-rays are released.
Yeah, there's some hidden tidbits.
I loved the... I mean, this is where we see Margot break. Mm. This is it for Margot.
Mm-hmm.
When she says, take it out... That's it.
Mm-hmm.
She's broken here.
She is now ready to kill Mason.
This was the moment I was waiting to see from Margot to
she's
accept.
Ready.
Now, and from that moment, I knew we were getting the eel. There's no way we're not getting the eel.
That was the last straw. Yeah.
So Cordell draws his little cut here dots.
Yes.
And
we had this back and forth too. We had the back and forth of Cordell cutting or someone cutting, and then the pig being cut, and then flesh being removed, and then the baby being removed.
Yeah, that was a really horrifying intercutting.
Yes.
There.
Oh, yeah.
And after Cordell says, you'll be sure to let me know if this hurts, won't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This whole scene was, I almost needed to just look at it through my fingers.
I couldn't believe it. I was actually, I mean, it's like...
I believe you gasped, if I'm not mistaken.
For the first time, like,
I think it was when it came over the teeth.
When it was pulled over the teeth, that was the moment it's like, boy, they're really asking us to believe Will can survive a lot of things.
Almost anything.
Yeah.
Because, if Hannibal got there in time, maybe he could have reattached his face, but it wouldn't have looked right, because there's no way he could have sewn it all back together, because muscles need to be attached, mm-hmm. and you can't just overlay a face.
Well, not quickly. You can do this over several hours there have been so many skin graft surgeries
and there have been full face replacements now.
Yes.
And they've done a decent job.
But you're talking about multiple surgeries and a very long, intensive surgery, which they were not set up for this little shack.
And maybe assistance.
Oh, of course, assistance. You need multiple hands.
But I love that when I saw the face overlaid on Mason, where you could see
it was not attached.
Above the eye holes, very There's a scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 where Leatherface puts the face of this woman's boyfriend over hers to keep her hidden. And it's horrifying.
Yes.
And it's and when I saw the rough cut around the eyes over Mason's face, it's like Mason has not had his face replaced. He's had a face put on top of his.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
And then the no face mask is put on top of that.
Right? What's the point?
Oh God, that inner cutting, that is, you know, every episode I think we've seen the most gruesome things we've ever seen on NBC.
They just up
the ante over and over and over.
Yeah.
And good Lord. And not only gruesome, but emotionally horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not just ew, it's good Lord.
What the
fuck are we seeing here?
You know what's hilarious about you saying that? That is what is written on the bottom of my page. It's written, what the fuck is going on? Exclamation point. In the middle of the baby being cut out and the face being cut off and the pulling off. And I was like, what is going on? And then I wrote, it's Cordell's face. Phew.
Well, this sequence is so superb. Where Mason awakens sort of choking and he yanks the no face thing off. He's calling for Cordell. He picks up it's like, oh, thank God.
Yes.
Picks up the mirror.
Poor Will does not have to have his face replaced.
He's
too pretty.
Okay, there's an animated GIF going around Twitter that's just Cordell face sliding off Mason. Cordell face sliding off Mason.
Well, because of course.
I retweeted it. It's horrifying. But also, I love how terrified and panicked Mason looks with his face covered in blood.
In blood, yeah.
Holy shit.
Things have not gone
to plan.
He
immediately goes for his gun.
Yeah. And then Hannibal walking through the snow with Will, holding him in, you've got elements of Bride of Frankenstein here. Mm-hmm. You've got direct elements of the movie Hannibal, where Hannibal carries Clarice out. I mean, this is an iconic pose with Will sort of slack, you know, his head hanging back and walking through the snow, and Chio just taking out pursuers that we didn't even know were there. We don't even know who they are. Who gives a fuck? Chio is, again, just magically moving from place to place with her gigantic rifle.
She's a good
hunter. And taking everybody out.
She's a good fisherman.
Yes, apparently. I loved the one shot of Will as he is, you know, as you said, you know, slack in Hannibal's hands. It was sort of like the reassuring Will still has his face shot.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. He actually had less cut open than Hannibal did in the last episode. And then Hannibal cut his face open. So, you know, Will's made it out ahead in this situation. Yeah. So let's go back to Mason panicking, screaming for Cordell, and Alana comes in like the badass of badasses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cordell's dead.
They're all dead out there.
And Hannibal got away.
And Hannibal got away.
But Mason's panic. Call the FBI. Get some of those bastards with guns in here now.
Mm-hmm.
He's so desperate.
And even desperate. I mean, again, The fact that Mason plays this whole final scene with his face covered in blood, I think it makes it for me, because when he gets asshole-y with Margot and is covered in blood and he's doing his little head wobble thing, you're a surrogate, Margot. I promised you a verger, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's horrific.
And Mason gives us a little reminder of why we need the Verger baby.
Oh,
in the
yeah.
absence
oh, yeah.
of an heir, Southern all the money Baptist goes to the Southern Church. Baptists, and nobody yeah. wants that.
No.
No, no, no.
Hannibal helped them milk Mason.
Yeah.
And you know what happens when you repeatedly...
I like picturing this scene.
Like the cattle prod.
Is are Margot and Alana standing nearby
and
while
Hannibal like,
jams the cattle prod up Mason's ass?
I think he's telling them what to do. I think he's just like, okay,
is
now
he directing?
You,
yeah, okay.
Now you do this.
It's like, no, do
no,
it
you
slowly.
Do that.
He's just managing.
Yeah. Yes.
He's the supervisor.
He's the,
super,
yes,
the supervisor.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's the semen collection.
well, I mean,
semen collection specialists.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just the project manager. I don't actually do anything.
And Alana holds up. Oh, and Mason says, "Oh, you're dead, Dr. Plume." But Alana gets another great line.
Yes.
Mason, we all are. Don't you know that?
I loved this.
But these aren't.
These aren't.
Here's the test tube of sperm that I probably should have put in the freezer.
No.
Yes.
No?
Not the freezer. You got to keep that warm.
Oh.
Well, you got to keep it warm until you can flash freeze it.
Okay. Mm. Well, good. Good to know.
So
Hannibal maybe told them how to do that, too.
So whenever somebody does a semen count, it has to be kept on a hot pack.
So do you think Alana is going to surrogate this baby?
What?
Good question.
I mean, like, after this, are they going to the kitchen for a turkey baster? Is that where this, you know, once they are done for the episode, is that what's happening?
I feel like they're smarter than that. I think they would get themselves to a doctor to preserve them.
To do it.
To do it, yeah.
Because the only staff doctor on the Verger compound
is dead.
Has no face.
Well,
dead.
Or does
has
have
no face.
Yeah.
I like to imagine him running around Verger Farm screaming with no face.
I have no face. I have no face.
And maybe his eyes have been poked out. I also like to imagine that.
Okay.
That his eyes have been poked out.
I feel that Margot wouldn't ruin chances of having the sperm be viable.
Well, also,
I think she would get
it's very possible she's made contacts because this has been their plan for a while.
Well, yeah. I think that she even if she gave up on being the mother herself or being the egg provider,
right.
I think she's looked into.
Right. And, I mean, it's reasonable that a Verger baby would be taken care of by a Verger. I imagine Mason has not amended his will to say, by the way, Margot is a bad mother and she shouldn't get my child.
Yeah. No, he wouldn't do that.
So, yeah.
Not with a plan that he had in mind.
So Mason goes to shoot Alana.
Mm-hmm.
Which
but hits
I think he'd be, I guess he's mad at Alana more than Margot, but goes to shoot Alana. Margot knocks him over. The bullet breaks the eel tank
and he goes tumbling
into the water.
And so does Margot.
And Margot gets out quickly, though.
Well, because Alana pulls her out.
Alana helps
and
her.
And holds him under. The eel approaches. And I love that little, almost like a little butterfly kiss that the eel gives Mason. Just
well,
like
he's
a,
noticing the blood.
Yeah.
I'm
and
sure.
then just goes for it. Just right, you know, after Mason spent an entire episode talking about eating penis, he gets the most phallic creature right down his throat.
Right down his throat.
And there was a lot of debate on this. This was a point of contention. But eels are very flexible, and the first thing they're going to want to do with a big open hole is go inside, especially if there's food in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of food in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then
also, too, it's you have to allow for the image that it doesn't necessarily have to be completely lifelike because it is.
Yeah. This is one I'm willing to accept, regardless of.
Yeah.
So this is not exactly what happened in the book. It's close.
No,
it's close.
But
not exactly.
I think it was good enough. And I guess I like the fact that it was both. You can see both sets of hands. You can see Alana's hands and Margot's hands holding him down.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
the scene. So it's not
they
just.
Did it together.
Here's why I like this better than the book. In the book, the tank gets broken.
Mm-hmm.
Margot takes the eel out and jams it in Mason's mouth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In the show, that eel's going to live.
It's true. The eel does live.
In the book, the eel is going to die.
Yeah,
the
eel's going to die. Yeah.
So I like the poetry of that.
The eel gets away with
the
it.
The eel's going to live. Although the FBI might kill the eel. They'll say something like, he's got a taste for human blood now.
I don't know if the FBI is going to do that. The only thing I would think is if they wanted evidence, but are they going to need evidence? I think it's pretty obvious what happened.
Yeah.
They don't need to go for tissue collection.
And we have that shot under Mason in the water as his blood fills the water, spreading. Which reminded me a lot of the Bedelia and Alana underwater stuff we got from earlier in the season.
Yeah, that whole idea of someone floating downwards into this abyss with the camera up, you know, and then the blood mixing in the water, which blood and water has been such a big theme this season.
So Mason's gone. That's it. And it played out better than I could have even hoped for from the book.
I'm happy we got our eel.
I am happy we got the eel, too. I am bummed that the cancellation likely means I won't be getting a Funko Pop Mason Verger to go with my Funko Pop Wendigo and Hannibal and Will.
That would be pretty awesome.
I would like a Mason Verger. Ophelia mentioned that she wanted Margot and Alana so she could reenact kaleidoscopic sex scenes with little latex characters.
I put them in different positions.
Maybe throw Will in there. I don't know.
Will and Hannibal.
Will sandwich.
And the Wendigo, because wherever Hannibal goes, the Wendigo follows.
Exactly. Jack could go also.
Jack gets a little lonely now in that big old house.
Oh, my goodness.
He's a man alone now. Where can a guy go, to get a little...
Action.
I wonder where a guy...
An ordinary Joe like myself.
Feeling kind of anxious. So we're back in Wolf Trap, Virginia.
Yep.
And
the return of the snowy landscape.
Chio guards the Wolf Trap house.
Yep.
Apparently.
Hannibal emerges.
Hannibal's inside.
And I like their exchange about can they go home.
Yeah.
She says, no more than you can. And Hannibal asks if she'd watch over him.
But not in a cage.
Some beasts shouldn't be caged.
Yeah. I thought that was so... And I like the way she said, I will.
Yeah.
Very just like forcefulness to it.
And they talk about what they were driven by, and Chio was driven entirely by the mystery of Misha. And she asks Hannibal if he ate her, and he says, yes, but I did not kill her. And so
I was shocked by that.
I mean, it is still dumb. So in the book, again, Hannibal is served Misha.
Yes.
And that explains his Hannibal-ness. I totally would get behind Misha being killed by someone, a drifter, anyone. It doesn't matter. Hannibal discovering the body, and rather than doing anything else, decides to eat her.
Yeah, him actually saying this, and it was like, okay, we've totally like wrapped this up. I wasn't expecting that reveal to happen here, and I think that's what shocked me.
Yeah,
I was expecting this to happen elsewhere or in another episode. So when this conversation happened, it was like, oh my God, we get to hear it now. Oh, this is cool.
Almost apropos of nothing, Hannibal says the most stable elements, Chio, appear in the middle of the periodic table, roughly between iron and silver. Between iron and silver, I think that's appropriate to you.
Which is actually what Hannibal said to Clarice.
It's part of a much longer letter that Hannibal wrote to Clarice, where he talks about how if Clarice is feeling misunderstood or out of her element, she should dig out her mother's old iron skillet and look into the iron, and she will see herself. And then this is part of the end of the letter. And there's also a wonderful line that was not used here, where Hannibal says, we are elaborations of carbon, Clarice, which I really like.
Yeah.
I I get what they're doing. This is one of those lines where it feels like Brian Fuller just wanted to put it somewhere. Yeah. And so why not here? I get it. It means Chio is stable, but I don't think she is.
It's also it's a transitional metal, iron and silver. And I think it's sort of like this idea that she is, you know, she's had her becoming.
Oh.
She's transitioned and she's been through so much. She's now out of stately Lecter Manor.
Stately Lecter Manor.
And
on the vast fields of Lithuania.
Exactly. She's gone on this journey and now has become, I think, on this, at the end of this journey, has become something else, but is sort of like fully fledged. And that she's also the iron and the silver, that she is at one and very strong and sort of like the useful hand, but in the time that this has gone on, has also become silver, where she's grown and changed and improved and become something, you know, beautiful in the end to Hannibal's eyes.
I like that interpretation.
I interpreted the malleability of silver versus iron.
Interesting.
So when Chio was talking to Will about how she's not as impressionable or as influenced as Will was by Hannibal, I kind of got that when she was kind of saying, you know, she's not as easily influenced. And so iron being much less malleable and silver being extremely malleable in their pure forms, I got that sort of sense, like you're not as easily swayed or influenced. You are somewhere in the middle. You are influenced by certain things, you know, her obvious drive to find out more about what happened to Misha, not necessarily to find out what happened to Will or to Hannibal.
And yeah, she doesn't really care much.
No.
She's been waiting outside the farm for Hannibal to come out.
Yeah, so I feel like that's maybe Hannibal recognizing that she's not on either side of that spectrum of being easily influenced.
The question becomes, could Chio have been lifted out of this season? And would it have mattered? Because this season shortchanged the relationship between Margot and Alana and Inspector Potsy. And Kate Kulczyk from the Televerse and This Is Our Design and I were talking about this, how this season needed like one more episode.
Oh, it did.
And I'm talking about it like it's a season, but it's not. This half season needed one more episode. And that episode would have been enough to flesh out these little elements that we weren't dealing with. And so ultimately the question becomes, Chio didn't really do much of anything that couldn't have been done in another fashion. So therefore, you know, I mean, like the questura on trying to get Hannibal could have disabled Will, and Hannibal could have taken Will. I mean, there's a number of ways we could have played this where it didn't need that character. And I like that character, so it's tough. But what do you think of that?
I think she's interesting, and she adds a different element, but I think ultimately, yes, she could be removed.
See, I would have loved to spend more time with the other ladies who needed more developing than have a brand new, somewhat poorly developed lady.
Yeah, because that's true. They didn't really even have enough time for her.
Yeah.
So she never really got fully developed. She became sort of an instrument.
She is a deus ex machina for Jack.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
you probably could have sort of found other ways for that to, you know, other people to kind of rush in and save Jack. And, you know, maybe there weren't any pursuers.
Right.
So Hannibal didn't need somebody.
Or maybe Hannibal could have killed those pursuers.
Just put Will down in the snow and start.
Yeah. It's like, you wait here, Will. And he goes and throws down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something I want to hear from the listeners about. Was Chio necessary? would the season have been better without her spending more time on the other characters, but especially Potsy?
Yeah.
I think.
Because I really feel Potsy was shortchanged.
But we have a wonderful scene between Will and Hannibal that is just as beautiful and haunting and sad as the scene in front of the Primavera in the last episode.
Yeah.
Will awakens as Hannibal comes back inside, and Blood Feast is, you know, it's funny that a piece so beautiful is called Blood Feast.
Blood Feast, yes.
Because all I can think of is the Herschel Gordon Lewis movie, which is not beautiful. As that comes back in, now Hannibal's notebook on the bed is full of equations that specifically Brian Fuller calls it's full of equations looking to reverse time. And it's the teacup coming back together that we see the teacup shatter again just before Hannibal goes inside. And so that's Hannibal's whole thing, is he lives with this unrelenting regret, and he doesn't know what to do about it short of reverse time. Right. That's his solution. Reverse time, and it'll all come back together, and it'll all be fine.
And Will is just the voice of reason.
Yeah, the teacup is broken. It's never going to gather itself back together again.
Man.
But I loved Hannibal's moment before that, where he picks up the notebook, and we're not even sure what it is. I didn't know what it was until I looked online. But Hannibal just asks, did we talk about teacups and time and the rules of disorder?
Yeah.
It's so wistful and regretful, and it's the knowing end of a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's the breakup is coming. Couldn't we just have one more conversation about this?
Exactly. We didn't get a chance to talk about this.
We didn't talk about teacups.
Yeah, we have to talk about teacups. You can't leave me.
So Will's memory palace is building, and it shares some rooms with Hannibal, and he's discovered Will there, victorious. Will says, when it comes to you and me, there can be no decisive victory.
Victory.
We are a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
But Will,
yeah, they're realizing.
You know, Will's been really tough this season. Because, like, he does the tableau for really no reason. Like, none at all. He just does that. And he sort of excuses it as he needed to see Hannibal. In order to what? Stop him, kill him, capture
understand him.
And I guess it goes back to Garrett Jacob Hobbs saying see again.
Yeah.
But here Will is, after having given no fucks, after having, you know, Hannibal's whole point was to eat Will to forgive him. But now they're beyond that. It's like that game is over.
Yeah.
And so when Will looks at the dog bed and says, I miss my dogs, and immediately I think of Winston.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about, we always felt that Winston represented the goodness in Will.
Mm-hmm.
And then says, I'm not going to miss you. I'm not going to find you. I'm not going to look for you. And I like that I'm not going to find you comes before I'm not going to look for you. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know where you are or what you do. I don't want to think about you anymore. And that's Will choosing the goodness over the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Mads Mikkelsen, again, can do so much with so little.
He looks like he's going to bawl.
Yeah.
Like, oh, totally. He looks so hurt.
He was dumped.
Yeah.
Everything on that face says, I was just dumped.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And not in a cutesy Sweet 16 way. Nope.
My heart has just been ripped from my chest way.
Well, when there's that, when Will makes it so final with, you know, like, you know, you delight, I tolerate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the wickedness.
I don't have your appetite. Goodbye, Hannibal. You do. You
dismissed.
See this. Oh, man. Oh, Yeah, he's like,
I am done with you.
And Hannibal's eyes are black here, like completely black. Mm-hmm. He picks up his notebook and goes to the door and pauses, like he's going to turn around, he's going to try something, he's going to say something, and then just goes.
Yeah, like he.
I honestly thought,
leaves.
Are you going to break your promise to Alana and just kill Will right now? Like, I just kept waiting for it. Like, all right, well then, fuck you, Will.
That's unfortunate. you don't want to see me again? You're not breaking up with me. I'm breaking up with you.
I'm going to eat your brain, whether you like it or not.
Just goes at him with a spoon.
Hey, he could do it.
If I can't be with you, no one can be with you.
So I was surprised at the time jump here. Hannibal goes out of Will's house in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police arrive at night. I imagine it's because the FBI had to have been called to the farm first, where Alana said something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then they go to Will's, and Will comes out on the porch. He's gone, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And then, unexpected, Jack, I'm here. And we hear the drum. The beat there
that ticking.
Yeah, as Hannibal comes out, hands raised, Chio has her
She's
sight
ready.
On him.
Yeah.
And immediately Hannibal's like, okay, now this is my game, motherfuckers. Look, you finally caught the Chesapeake Ripper, Jack.
Uh-huh.
But Jack knows better.
He's like, nah-uh.
I didn't catch you. You surrendered.
You surrendered, yeah.
That's not
and
what
then,
this is.
I want you to know exactly where I am, where you can always find me. And then looks at Will with that tiny bit of a smile.
It's like, you wanted to get rid of me. Ha ha.
And it's totally believable that Hannibal would want that revenge so much and not want to let Will. You can't cut me out of your life. Will,
I won't let
I
you.
I will always be here.
I'm going to be where you can find me all the time.
Right. It is. It's totally. It's like, you didn't want to know where I am or where to find me. Well, guess what? You will know where I am all the time now.
And there's a wonderful YouTube video that adds the song My Boyfriend's Back to the end of this episode, where you just hear it coming in the background, and when Hannibal looks at Will, you just hear My Boyfriend's Back, and you're going to be in trouble.
Trouble. Hey now.
It's great. And so Hannibal is cuffed as Will goes inside, and Chio throws her gun over her shoulder and walks off into that beautiful snowfall.
Yeah, that was
where
gorgeous.
We're listening, and we hear the chimes in the background, and I really feel, and Brian Fuller has pretty much confirmed this. This is we will not see Chio again. That's it.
Okay.
And so this is that character's farewell. She comes in, is involved, and gets to walk away.
Wow.
Into her future, into her life, for the first time in maybe decades.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. She's got a lot to do.
Yeah.
Mm. Or nothing to do.
So yeah, that.
She's got a lot of TV to catch.
She does. She probably should watch Breaking Bad.
Yeah. She's going to be binge watching on Netflix like crazy. Huh.
What is Netflix? Wait, what?
You can watch all your shows all at the same time?
So holy shit, this episode. Yeah. You know, even just going through it here for the podcast, there's so much emotion. There's so much beautiful and horrible in this. And for the last two episodes have really married this Grand Guignol horror, this silly, over-the-top, weird horror with stunning character moments. These two scenes between Will and Hannibal in the last two episodes are just unbelievably beautiful and sad.
Yeah. Very emotional.
And it's hard to believe we like Hannibal so much. We feel bad for him. It's hard to believe we're okay with everything Will has done to get us here. Yeah, there's so much that this show has done, so much that the show has put us through as an audience.
Oh yeah.
To
every episode they put us through the ringer.
Yeah, I don't even need, you know, this episode made me okay with the show ending. I still want more, but I'm okay with it ending.
Storyline wise, you feel satisfied.
I feel satisfied, yeah. I feel we've got, I would have been really upset up until now if the show had just stopped. You know, and NBC tried to do that to us by moving it from Thursday to Saturday. And I pointed out on Twitter that ethics may give way to aesthetics to a majority of the Hannibal audience who maybe are not as concerned about the ethical implications of finding these episodes that are airing in Canada before the United States. Because NBC should have just dumped them all for us. You know, put them all on Hulu or Amazon, whatever you want. You know, like all of Aquarius was available from episode one.
Oh,
why not just give us all of it? And they're killing Aquarius, which they gave a second season.
Oh,
and I don't get what they're doing. You know, Fox gets a lot of shit for what they did to Firefly. And they deserve that shit for what they did to Firefly. And NBC, up until they moved it to Saturday, we were like, oh, no, it's okay. NBC, they gave us all this already. And then we start thinking about it. And NBC cut their fee from $700K an episode to run Hannibal last season to $150K. NBC didn't do shit for Hannibal this season.
Oh, my God.
Really, we could kickstart the fees required to run Hannibal this season. Yeah. We could kickstart more than the fees. You know, the show we couldn't pay for, but the fees NBC is paying, and then to move it to the death slot. I mean, that has been the death slot since it killed Twin Peaks. Moving Twin Peaks to Saturdays is what killed Twin Peaks.
I don't know why they do that.
Because they don't care. They want to burn it off. They know the sponsors don't care about Saturday nights. And Dateline did better than Hannibal in that time slot.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, the audience wanted real murder.
Right.
Instead of beautiful murder. And it's NBC really, really fucked this up. And I think, you know, I've never seen a fandom more loyal than the Fannibals. I've never, you know, I've seen the Browncoats. I ran with the Browncoats.
They're pretty darn loyal.
But the Fannibals are something amazing. And not only are they something amazing, but they're this huge chunk of the audience that television is always worried about not getting. And it's young women.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it.
It's, I don't get it either. It doesn't make any sense.
So, yeah. It's rough. It's rough. And, you know, and now we're going into Red Dragon. I honestly feel like I need a break of at least a week. This is weird. I usually hate short seasons. Like, I thought the bullshit about splitting Breaking Bad's last two seasons into two parts, or they did that with Mad Men also. They split it into two chunks for really no reason. And I always felt it's like, you know, if you're going to do that, just call it two seasons.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Is it about how you pay the actors? Is that what's causing you to say this is one season, but we're going to take 2 years to tell it?
Yeah.
And this one, I actually feel like I could take a break of a few weeks or 6 months and then watch Red Dragon. This feels like the end of a season. It was so weird to see a next week on Hannibal. After as final as this episode felt.
Very true.
And to have a next week on Hannibal with Jimmy Price right up in there. You know, it's like, hey, remember this guy? We got him back. He's coming back.
We're going to go old school. We're going to bring all your favorites back.
So, yeah. Red Dragon's going to be a stunning achievement, I have no doubt. And it's going to be interesting to see the more artsy version of Hannibal merged back with the procedural version of Hannibal, because they have to go back to procedural.
Yeah. It's been interesting to take this vacation from the procedural, which may have been something that assisted the demise of the show. Because usually when you start changing things up like that, people don't like it.
Brian Fuller knew it was over. That's why he took American Gods.
Mm.
He knew that there was almost no chance of it coming back. With the drop in licensing fee, that, I mean, I'm sure NBC was saying, you know, we're probably not going to do this again.
Right. And he was happy to get as far as he had gotten.
And I think that may be why he drew Red Dragon forward. You know, maybe partially this, well, we really didn't need 13 episodes in Italy. And it's true. We didn't need 13 episodes in Italy.
No, that would have been too much.
We probably could have done 9, 10. You know, we had 7 on that storyline. And then Red Dragon. So I think he was just, I'm going to give them Red Dragon. We're going to do Red Dragon. So we're going to do it this season because we're probably not coming back.
Exactly. Got to get it in now.
It's frustrating.
But we still have Red Dragon.
We still have Red Dragon. We have 6 more episodes of Hannibal Season 3. If NBC deigns to show them all to us.
They better. They better. That would be cruel. And
there's going to be some break-ins if they decide to withhold.
I did learn a lot about the various streaming tube sites for TV. There's a whole shady web out there
where
you can stream television that has aired elsewhere and not in your local jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Oh. The seedy underbelly.
So yes, and to watch Reddit within the hour after Hannibal aired, and have everybody like, hey, anyone find it yet? anyone got anything? What are we all doing on Thursday night? I mean, come on. Where is Canada? Come on, Canada.
Come on, Canada. We're counting on you.
So, that's it for tonight. We'll be back next week where Kate Kulczyk is going to be joining us for an episode entitled The Great Red Dragon, the first episode to ditch the courses titles in the series. And we'll meet Richard Armitage as our new cast member, who Brian Fuller has said is basically the third lead in the second half of the season.
Oh, wow.
So I'm excited.
Well, I'm really excited. I know it is kind of a bummer to lose the courses. But, you know, it sort of makes sense since the digestivo is basically a drink that you have at the end of a meal to help digest it. So
yes.
There was a lot to digest this episode.
There is a lot to digest. Exactly.
So you can email us at info@eattherudecast.com. We really do want to hear your thoughts on the pig situation and on Chio. Really interested in your thoughts. Tweet at us at eattherudecast. You can also comment at eattherudecast.com. We've had a lot of wonderful commenters, and our amazing listener who just takes us to task point by point by point by point in his comments.
Yes.
At everything we have gotten wrong.
He's got epic comments.
Epic comments. And check out our Tumblr, eattherudecast.tumblr.com. Miko, where can they find you online?
I'm at Technogeisha, Miko Technogeisha at Facebook. You can find me at Life on the Swing Set and at Technogeisha.com.
Ophelia?
I am at Ophelia Tesla on Twitter, and I am Ophelia Tesla on Facebook, and OpheliaTesla@gmail.com.
And I am Cooper S. Beckett on Twitter, CooperSBeckett.com. For my book, my audiobook, my ebook, and all my various shenanigans.
Did you say shenanigans.
I'm going to pistol whip the next guy who says shenanigans. And of course, that's Brian Cox, the first Hannibal Lecter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. We did like a full circle. Mm-hmm. There. Brought that right around.
Thank you for joining us at the table.
Hey, this is Dan Savage from the Savage Lovecast and Savage Love, and you're listening to a Swing Set podcast at Swing Set FM.